Jupiter Broadcasting presents this program in stereo.
This episode of the Linux Action Show is brought to you by the good-looking folks at GoDaddy.com. Use our code Linux and save yourself some cash.
This week on the Linux Action Show, we push through the Linux Fest hangover and tell you what rocked and what shocked. Plus, some Linux video editing tips and recording Google Plus Hangouts. And so much more!
All this week on the Linux Action Show!
And welcome to the Action Show, season 21, episode 7. My name is Brian. That guy's Chris.
Hey there, Brian. Check it out. It's not even a joke. It's for serious. This bus runs Linux.
Of course it does.
This was submitted by, I'm going to say his name is Heyku.
Heyku.
Heyku. In the Linux Action Show subreddit. He actually took the picture himself, and he says it's from Germany. And that if you look very closely on the picture, you'll actually see that something failed to start.
What failed to start?
Well,
that doesn't sound good. Someone on a bus failing to start.
It was, dear.
Looks
like it was activating remaining swap devices, NFS tab.
Oh, that's not good.
I'm looking at this, so you can't quite tell 100%. But based on the gratuitous use of Riser FS up here above for HDA 5, and HDA 6, and then also the OpenSUSE is known for their that kind of coloring on their boot thing, and they also do this kind of thing where they have all the parameters on a line like this.
Yeah, it looks like SUSE.
I'm saying it's OpenSUSE.
I'm just saying
older SUSE.
I'm saying straight up, if your bus has failures like that or lines that say they haven't been set up yet. You get off that bus and you walk. You grab a bike. You get one of those guys that has the baskets and can pull you.
Wait, down there. You see the bus driver down there? That's the bus driver down there. But look, Brian.
The bus driver.
D-Bus Damon started just fine.
D-Bus, nice. Up here. I didn't even see that. Oh, man, this is going to be a good show.
Yeah, so we are a little hungover from Linux Fest Northwest. That's what we just got back
from. Hungover as in we did not sleep, really.
Yeah.
it's Linux hangover.
It was quite a party, and there was a ton of stuff there, so we got a whole bunch of highlights we're going to go through.
We're going to be talking about it. We got videos. We got stuff to talk about.
Plus some stuff from the after party, which is bitching.
Pretty choice.
Yeah.
Before we go any further, though, let's talk about GoDaddy. And Danica Patrick. Bring up Danica Patrick, Chris.
There she is.
Where is she? I'm not serious.
There she is. Yep, right there. Good morning to Danica over at GoDaddy.com, the fine sponsors of this program, the Linux Action Show.
Chris, can I say something?
Yes, sir.
This is a really nice change of pace. I like this Danica being between us and not you pretending to be Danica with your head and her hair or whatever it is you're doing.
Danica.
It got weird in a hurry.
Emailed me.
Yeah.
And let's just say I think there's a wig in the mail, but I'm not sure. We'll see.
Wow.
Yeah,
I don't understand.
I think somebody liked it, is what I'm saying. So, prepare yourself for that mentally. Anyways,
this is where we've gone to. Originally, it was just, "Hey, Danica's pretty," and now it's Danica has weird wig fetishes with Chris, and we don't know what's going on.
Well, she just wants everybody to know that.
I know for a fact Danica liked it originally, yeah. But now with where it's going, I feel like it's just not cool anymore.
Well, you know,
it's cool for me.
I don't want her to be distracted when she's out in the race car.
That's the thing. Yeah. I don't want her flipping her car all over the place
because
she needs to go fast with the cars and the gasoline,
right? And not thinking about me and her hair wig,
right? Because she's already thinking about me.
Thankfully, Brian, she doesn't have to worry about high domain name prices because she used our code 599COM.
That's the best segue I've ever heard.
Thanks. Also, she can use the code SPRING8 at checkout to save 15% on pretty much anything.
Pretty much anything.
Those codes are expiring within days, so use those if you've missed the opportunity. We always have the codes Linux to save you 10% on checkout.
You're up Poopoo Creek. There's no chance for saving money after that.
Screwed. So, thank you to GoDaddy for sponsoring this week's episode of the Linux Action Show.
Fantastic. So, what's your Android pick this week?
Are you ready for an Android
pick? I'm ready. I want to hear it. I want to hear an amazing Android pick.
This one actually came from the chat room because I was too much of in a fog to actually get my stuff together and do an appropriate pick. But it is the perfect pick after Linux Fest because several people came up to me and asked me, what is a good IRC client for my Android device? Now, I've picked one before. I like the UI better on this one, and it's called AnChat.
It's pretty straightforward UI. It's nice and easy looking.
I just totally slipped the gas and got in there, and it threw me for a loop even though I planned to do it. Anyway. Anyways, EndChat is a great free app. It's got a great ratings, 2,438 five-star ratings in the Android marketplace, which is pretty darn good, even though they blurred out some dirty conversation in their screenshots here. I like it a lot, and of course, you could use this to connect to our irc.freenode.net, yeah. Right? And then Pound Jupiter Broadcasting is our chat room.
That's choice.
Yeah, you could check that out, B-Man. Now, I didn't load up your picks, so let me get those going. Oh, yeah, I know. Of course I know what your pick is, because I suggested it.
Yeah, you got my pick.
Yeah, you want to do it?
Yeah, you do it.
All right, so, yeah, okay, perfect. So, this app pick for this week is the Deluge BitTorrent Client. I actually asked on Twitter and on Google+, and surprisingly, Twitter dominated Google+, in this regard. Like, I got way more responses on Twitter.
Yeah, way more.
Deluge was a very popular BitTorrent
deluge
for Linux. Now here's why: is we are moving to a new backend video storage content distribution network,
yep,
because Blip TV pulled the rug out from underneath us and we were kind of screwed and we didn't have downloads.
Kind of super screwed.
We're also gonna each show in the show notes will have a torrent. And we can now torrent these shows as well, and there'll be a torrent RSS feed. So if you subscribe to that and like your favorite RSS client, you'll just automatically start the next download.
But like Miro and everything else, you just pop it right in there, bam, it grabs it, torrents it for you, and seeds it for you if you want to do that. It's really cool.
And what we're doing that's really cool is I don't know why more distributions, probably for the bandwidth reasons, don't do this, but torrents have the web seed option. And we'll set in our torrent files a web seed that points to the CDN. So if you grab the torrent file of the Linux Action Show or TechSnap or Stoked or whatever, if you grab that and nobody's seeding that at that time, because that happens with torrents, it'll still pull it from our CDN.
The web. Yeah, so you don't have to wait around because only one guy on dial-up's seeding it. Yeah,
that's true.
This stuff's always going to be available.
We tested
nice and fast.
You could have like 80% of the file in the swarm. But if the remaining 20% isn't in the swarm, once your BitTorrent client gets to that point, it'll go get that from the CDN.
That's way cool.
It can get bits and pieces from the CDN. It's really nice. So, yeah, Deluge, there you go. Link to that in the show notes. But any BitTorrent client will work to get these shows. It's going to be the HD video of all the shows because it's kind of just the most straightforward one to do.
Yeah.
And just look for the torrent download links in the direct downloads area and look for the torrent RSS link in the RSS feeds.
Hardcore.
Area. All right, B-Man, what do we have for our Linux distro totally random pick this week?
Well, the totally random pick this week is a kind of an old school one in a way. It is good old Yellow Dog. And if you know Yellow Dog, you know that it runs pretty much just on PowerPC chips. That's pretty much its whole thing. It runs on PowerPC. You can also install this on a PS3 if you have a particular PS3 that Sony hasn't screwed you on yet by changing it. But basically, Yellow Dog is you take Fedora and you make it run on PowerPC.
Yeah.
That is Yellow Dog. That's Yellow Dog.
And one of the things that's interesting about that is Yum came from Yellow Dog in Fedora. Mm-hmm. Yum was the Yellow Dog update manager. And so that's where Fedora took that. And it's, you know, it's a synergy there.
Like, worth noting, Yellow Dog's still rocking and rolling. Yellow Dog had a release back in December. I mean, it's still active and under development. Yeah. Which kind of blew my mind because I haven't looked at Yellow Dog in
years.
They got
to be moving beyond Mac PowerPC desktops at this point.
Well, they got the PlayStation 3.
Yeah. Well, there's other PowerPC chips out in the market. And they actually have a good little presence on embedded devices as well.
Yeah, that's true.
There you go.
That's pretty groovy.
Yeah. So the Yellow Dog Linux guys, if you do have an old PowerPC and Mac or something like that, you throw that sucker on there. You know,
rocking and rolling.
You know, we didn't even mention that we're not doing a regular news segment this week because it's sort of like our Linux,
it's a weird week.
It's our Linux Fest clip show.
Yeah. So yeah.
We're still going to have a Matt how-to segment, and Matt's going to go over using KDN Live to blur out stuff in video. So it's like a one-part KDN Live tutorial and a one-part Google Plus tutorial. It's one of his longer ones, and that'll be in the second part of the show or whatever.
The third part, maybe.
The 189th.
I don't know what's going on right now. Yeah.
No, but so we're no news segment.
No.
But B-Man. Should we go check out Linux Fest Northwest?
It would be really good if we did that. Today is Sunday, and it is early in the morning. It feels earlier than it is because we were up extremely late last night at Linux Fest Northwest, and I don't know exactly what's happening right now.
And I was drinking, and I haven't been drinking for a while, so you know, you get kind of that lightweight area again.
See,
so
I wasn't drinking, but I tell you what,
had a food hangover and you burnt your finger.
I burnt my finger. I burnt my pinky finger, which I tell you right now, I burned it so bad.
Yeah.
Okay. Linux Fest is great. We'll get into that in a second, but I want to talk about my pinky first.
Okay.
Because we leave Linux Fest because all the sessions are over for the day. The after party is going to start, which we'll also talk about because it's awesome. Yeah. And seriously, if you're thinking, oh, I'm going to tune out right now, don't. Tesla coil, Faraday cage. Amazing.
Look, oh, tease right there. Oh, don't show. Just tease.
It's ridiculous.
There it is, right
there. Go. Not yet. Not yet. Crazy. So we go out and get some Mexican food. We go to this place called Jalapenos.
Jalapenos, yep.
And I get myself some fajitas.
Fajitas, Brian. Fajitas is, yeah.
Whatever. Okay, I'm in the very northern part of America. At this point, we don't pronounce anything right.
Okay.
So I get some of those fajitas, and they are delicious. And it comes on one of those cast iron black skillets made of molten lava, I'm pretty sure. I touch my pinky on it, and it burns.
Yeah.
It's just my pinky. It's just a little tiny part of my pinky that's not even a quarter inch in size.
But if you guys think you heard a lot about
so
it.
So bad.
Imagine how much I heard about
it. He heard about it nonstop. So, in fact, I had to leave there, go find a drugstore, get myself a Band-Aid to start with, and get myself some of that spray-on, make-it-numb spray everything.
Right.
I was such a baby. I was it. I thought, you know what, I'm just going to have to lie down and cry the rest of the night. But then I got to the after party.
Yeah.
And they had Tesla coils everywhere, and I forgot all about this.
We should back up and say Linux Fest Northwest.
Oh, yeah, Linux Fest.
Happens
right.
every April in Bellingham, Washington, right here in the Pacific Northwest. And this year, it felt like probably the biggest Linux Fest I've been to in 4 years, maybe more.
It was crazy crowded. I showed up a little bit late because, you know, whatever. I do that. I just show up to places late. So I roll in there, and I roll on up to get my badge. I go in there to get my badge.
Oh, you should have worn our badges.
I should have worn my badges.
Anyway.
I roll on in there, and I'm like, hey, I'm Brian. I'm here for the badge. Oh, hey, Brian, come on in. You know, they start looking around. They're like, we're out of those little plastic things that you put your badges in because they ran out. And I'm like, oh, no. Luckily, they'd already printed mine out, and they found it in the back, so I still got a plastic thing. But they almost ran out of paper.
Yeah.
To print badges.
Yeah.
They ran out of those little plastic things.
Yeah.
They ran out of those, like, there's like little, like, ribbons they could put on things.
Yeah.
Like, if you paid for something or you were, like, a sponsor or a media exhibitor.
Flare
guy,
is what I like to call
it. Flare. They started running out of those.
Mm-hmm.
It was hardcore. When you're running out of the ability to print the badges for the festival you're doing,
right.
It's crazy.
It's a good sign, though. It's a good problem to have.
I think there roughly was like four, maybe five times as many people here yesterday as it was last year on Saturday.
I mean, it was
crazy
to the point where during one of your first Linux Sucks talks, they came in and said, "Well, we're violating fire marshal rules. We got to kick 15 of you out of here."
Yeah, 15 people.
And so the presentation just had to stop while 15 people had to leave.
I had to basically threaten people. I'm like, "You got to leave."
Both the Linux Sucks talks and Why Linux Doesn't Sucks talks are up on the JB YouTube and. Brian's
over. You can check them out at lunduke.com as well.
So if you want to watch those, they're about a half hour each or 45 minutes.
Yeah, something like that.
So you can, they're always good.
Packed. And that's crazy.
Crazy packed.
Crazy.
And a lot of the presenters that were there were, some of them were new faces, some of the old faces were there.
Yeah.
Tons and tons of Linux Action Show fans, which is great, which is a lot of fun. But I attended a couple of different talks, and I've got some clips. Do you want me to jump into them?
Yeah, absolutely. Let's dive in.
All right. So I attended the Vivaldi tablet talk, which was done by two gentlemen, and one of the gentlemen was Aaron Saigo via Skype from Switzerland.
That's how Aaron rolls.
But it worked out okay.
Yeah, it works.
One of the bits that came up from audience Q&A is, well, once you get the Vivaldi tablet out there that's 7-inch, what about a 10-inch tablet? Because this gal says, you know, I'm looking at the iPad 3, and to me, that screen is something I kind of want. So she asks Aaron, what about a 10-inch tablet? And what's interesting is Aaron talks about not just going to a 10-inch tablet, but there is a real scale of economy of scale issues that that they run into when they do that.
Yeah.
So here, I'll play that for you.
The 10-inch will have a higher resolution, and as we go and produce, we'll inevitably get higher and higher resolution display. So one of the unfortunate realities of doing this, and why we originally tried to work with established companies that have access to large amounts of hardware, buying capability anyways, is the top end of the mobile hardware business is basically owned by a very small number of companies, such as Apple. They come in, they get previews of all the hardware before anyone else, and they go, yes, we'll take all of that. Or a huge amount of that. And so the very top end hardware is extremely difficult to get a hold of unless you're one of these, you know, four or five companies. The 10% under that is possible, but the costs go really, really high, dramatically so, in fact, unless you're ordering in, you know, volumes, six-figure volumes. So, which we're not there yet. So when we looked at it, we went, well, let's get something that's good, that is usable day to day, that actually, you know, isn't, you know, hobbling along, isn't a horrible crutch to use. But we also realized that we wouldn't be competing, or able to compete with the top tier, you know, people on raw hardware specs. And we know that. Eventually, you know, everything's successful, and we, you know, get enough support, there's enough sales, and we'll slowly work our way up. We're entering in, not at the bottom, we're actually entering in somewhere, you know, above mid-level.
Well, I'll leave it there. So he kind of talks a bit about their plans to go with 10-inch tablets. Now, the audio is not so great because it's a conference, but
it's a conference.
It's one of the first times I've heard him kind of publicly talk about, yeah, 10-inch tablet is on the map.
Yeah.
I was away for a second. Did he mention that the 10-inch tablet they're looking at is going to even have a mini Ethernet port potentially?
I don't think so.
I might not clip that. Yeah. So they're definitely already looking at a model. They've already got specs for it and all that kind of stuff. And Ethernet.
Awesome.
It's a 10-100. It's not gigabit, but on a tablet, who cares?
Dude, do you really need gigabit Ethernet on a tablet?
I know. That's exactly
awesome,
it. So just a couple more Aaron clips. I know they're not. I'll just cut them off if they get a little long. But one of the questions that came up is, can you tell us more about the App Store? Now, if you're watching the video version, he'll actually show a screenshot of their mock-up UI for the App Store. It's an interesting concept he has, and I'll just play a little bit of it, and we'll go as long as we go.
Nice.
What's actually MKD's Git repositories? What's really neat is you don't have to use our front end either. You can take the library, or you can write your own thing from scratch if you want, because the protocol is all documented. It speaks JSON over HTTP, so you can write it in front end in whatever you want, a web front end or something in GDK or Java, whatever floats your boat. What's really interesting is long term, the idea is that third parties can even host their own content store. So the use case I always think about is school systems that are going to be distributing things like textbooks and whatnot. So they'd be able to actually either have us host it or host it themselves and provide their content to their audience. So again, this whole thing with open participation and us realizing.
So I like that a lot. So
that's
what he's saying there is, you know, you could roll your own App Store just based on our technology. It's JSON, it's HTTP, and there you go. I thought that was really cool. A little bit more about the...
It's very straightforward.
Yeah,
I like that.
Just a little bit more about the App Store backend, then we'll move on.
A lot of applications and desktop widgets, wallpapers, service offerings as well. So if you want to hook up with an online backup synchronization service, or in the future things like OwnCloud, there'll be a catalog there that you just go in and go, yes, I would like to synchronize with or have some sort of online backup and storage stuff. I lose my device, it's okay. And so we've created this whole infrastructure for passing content on to the owner of the devices. So we went right through the whole concept of the whole process of what does the philosophy mean, what would that look like in a content delivery system.
So he also talked about, you know, putting music in there potentially, putting, you know,
putting anything, like
videos in there, whatever you want.
Yeah.
So it's a neat open App Store platform. He also said that they will, for at least during the initial launch, their plan is to manually review submissions.
Yeah.
And then vet them that way, sort of a la App Store, Apple App Store. So yeah.
But then, of course, you can also, when you're talking about hosting your own stuff,
oh yeah,
it doesn't matter then.
Doesn't matter.
Yeah.
That's what's so awesome about
that's
it.
Choice.
You could, you know, corporate app stores where you have all the corporate different stuff on there for large corporations. That could be huge. You
a
know?
Brian App Store.
Dude, you could have a Brian
just app store. Just my crap.
You could.
Awesome.
You really could.
Awesome.
So, all right. Well, do you want to show, how about we show this Cloud in a Box demo?
Ooh, I'd like
can
to
we
see
talk
that.
About this a little bit? This is a neat deal. So these guys are working with a company called, well, they probably talk about it in the video a little bit, but Silicon Mechanics, which is a local Linux server builder OEM here
yep.
in Washington State, and they're building an entire cloud infrastructure in a box.
In a box. We gotta see pictures to
yeah.
do this thing
all right,
justice.
Let's do it.
Mind if I put you on camera?
No, not at all.
You want to tell me what's going on here?
I,
I'd be happy to. This is what we call a cloud in a box on wheels.
Okay.
What we have inside the chassis is we have 10 terabytes of shared storage on three different tiers. We've got SSD, we've got 10,000 RPM storage in here.
Very nice.
And these are the servers from Silicon Mechanics. And what these are is the front part of this. We've got 12 hard disks in each one of the two U racks. And on the back side is access to four blade servers.
Okay.
So in this small enclosure, we've got 96 cores connected up to 10 terabytes of shared storage.
Wow.
And we sell the system or can lease it.
So which company are you with?
I'm with Private Cloud Leasing.
Okay. This looks like a pretty great box.
Yeah, we're really happy with it. It's kind of unique in the marketplace. So if you're doing a data center upgrade,
right,
and you need to move your application someplace so that you can get all the old hardware out,
for a bit, right?
You can lease this for as long as you need to. And then if it turns out that you're happy with it, just continue the lease and scrap your old data center equipment.
That's awesome.
And just keep this.
So how cool is that thing?
It's a big rig. I mean,
yeah,
we're talking like, you know, multi-hundred K dollar rigs here.
Yeah, yeah.
But basically, like, the idea is if you want to have like a random render farm, you're like, I really want to render Toy Story 5,
right,
but I don't want to buy the hardware. You just lease it for a month. They roll in there on wheels, this entire like crazy core render farm, and boom, away you go.
What I like about it too is he kind of gives the scenario, well, maybe I'm doing a data center move.
Yeah.
And I want a temporary setup storage, and it's based on it's OpenStack, it's CentOS in there, or whatever you really want, but that's how it'll come pre-configured. So it literally has a whole virtualization environment ready for you to just pick up and move, and they don't lock you into any kind of software vendor solution, and it's all based on Linux. Cooling's in that thing, the UPS batteries in that
thing? Oh, big time cooling, yeah. So they've got air circulating all, so you can just close the doors.
It can
all
operate closed.
And it operates completely closed. It's got batteries that they can just basically unplug and just wheel it around and keep it running.
So for you, crazy, for you
cool
audio listeners, it's a bright blue chassis that is completely self-contained, and it's about 5.5 feet tall, and it's on wheels.
It's like the network infrastructure version of a TARDIS. It's so cool.
Or if you're familiar with like Sun Microsystems made like the data center in a shipping crate, this is a data center in a
shiny
box.
Blue box that you really want to have.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Well, one thing that I thought was kind of interesting is PCBSD. This is just a clip just to show you. PCBSD got a lot of attention this year. All these people here are interested in that guy with in the red shirt there. That's the creator of PCBSD. But lots of Linux guys. Lots of Linux guys there interested in PCBSD, which I thought was interesting. So that guy right there, he's the guy that is in the red shirt there, is the creator of PCBSD. And so I always find that interesting.
Yeah, they're always there at Linux. He's always there at Linux Fest. But this year, he got a lot of attention.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So one of the things I got my...
A lot of little devil ears going around the fest.
There were, yeah. They definitely... that was a good little marketing technique they did. I got my hands on a Plasma Active tablet thanks to a listener named Paul, who brought his Vivaldi hardware, kind of like mine, but he actually loaded Plasma Active. And I got my chance to play with it. I'll say it's definitely still in the early stages, but it's a real thing. I mean, I was
cool. I
you can keep talking.
Oh,
I was just going to mute the video. Yeah, so you can keep talking.
Good thinking. Is that the only one I put in there? Maybe it's the only one I put in there.
It does look pretty good.
Then Marble crashed on me. But that's what it looks like.
Oh, Marble. Always crashing.
Yeah, it's a real living thing you can actually play with. So
awesome.
There you have it.
Way awesome.
Hey, why don't I show this? We have this this Pogo Linux. So, you know, the Pogo guys, another local Linux server vendor in Washington State was there.
Well, they do more than servers.
Yeah. They do some really badass desktops.
Really hardcore workstations.
But they were there, and they were showing a motion-controlled chair that runs Linux. That was actually going to be my runs Linux pick, but here, I'll show you. Here's the chair.
How do you compete with a bus, though?
Yeah.
All right.
That's the chair. That's what the chair looks like. Here's an interview with the guy behind the chair.
All right, so what's going on here?
Well, we decided this year that we wanted to bring our racing simulator, give everyone a little fun here at Linux Fest. So we figured it'd be a fun way to hang out and talk to the people.
Now, does this run on Linux?
This current platform does not, but the motion stuff is all custom built based on Linux.
Cool.
So.
Right on.
I didn't get a chance to play it, but
way cool. So yeah, so basically, the awesome motion controlled chair runs Linux. The video game does not.
No, the video games. Yeah. Those are. I'm assuming they're probably running Windows. They didn't say, but
we gave them a little bit of a hard time about that, but it was all in good fun because honestly, the chair is the cool part. Anyone can play a video game on a screen.
One of the great things is that Linux Fest Northwest does a barbecue every year, and it's there. They had ribs and salmon and steaks. Sandwiches and coleslaw and beans, and it was a good little thing, and boy was there a lot of people there in the foyer eating lunch. It was quite the event. I guess that's probably the best clips I got. Do you want to jump to the after party?
Before
we go, I know, but I gotta show this brewing one.
This one's a little bit longer of a video. Honestly, it's pretty cool though. So what they've done here is they've created a complete open source platform for brewing beer and
everything
automated brewing
from
beer.
Hardware controllers to the software back. In fact, here, I'll show you the hardware controller they use. They run this entire thing off a Pentium 2 running Linux. All of this. A Pentium 2.
Awesome. Don't forget to unmute.
Right. So here we go.
Rebuild it.
Wow. Smells delicious.
Right. Control module.
See? There are hazards in making beer. There you go, right there. So what do the control modules do in relation to making beer?
This is strictly an I.O. It communicates with the computer. All the processing
there, but so the other thing that these guys did, this is what I love about geeks, dude, is they took a server rack, and that's what they are brewing on, is an effing server rack. That they added burners to.
Yeah,
how awesome is that? And they have this whole brew system on a series of portable server racks that they wheel in and out of their garage. They wheel to events like this. I mean, just totally brilliant stuff.
Gosh, that's cool.
So, all right. So here, I'll play a little bit of an interview with a developer who is creating the automation system to automate the brewing, but they're writing it in such a way that it could be used to automate farm equipment. It could be used to automate other things. It could be used to automate cleaning cake bowls.
That needs to happen.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, my cake bowl's just dirty.
That's actually really, it's talking to the one wire devices directly. What this does is serve, it reports data up to this web app. And it's also designed, this is very generalized. So if you were to plug in a new one wire devices, it'll do the right thing. It would repopulate with these new devices. Then you give them a human-friendly name, and you choose a parameter. I mean, most of the time, like the choice would be temperature for these, but I didn't want to decide for the future users.
Right.
So you know, they create an entirely new kind of bizarre device 1 year from now.
Right.
This will do the right thing.
Right.
So that's just nicknaming it. This is where some of the action really starts happening. You're writing routines or programs. And so a brutally simple example would be, while the outdoor temperature is less than 30 degrees, turn the fridge off.
Right.
This is a program or routine composer. And you're going to compose them. And it's really standard file system stuff in that you save a file, you can whatever.
Here, I'll leave it there.
That's so cool.
That I love that, because the guy's like, you know, it's just whatever kind of thing. Like the whole idea, like I would love to have a control module on my fridge in the winter that just says, if it's 30 degrees in my garage, you don't need to
run. Don't worry about it. Yeah, we're cool, dude.
Yeah, save me some energy. So this guy went on. I'll I can post this online somewhere, because this is really an interesting interview.
No, it really is. It really is.
I kind of want to talk about the after party, too. But one question that came up in the chat room was, well, hey, that guy's running on a Mac. Well, the web backend is all on Linux. People bring Macs to this.
Oh, heavens, yeah.
Yeah.
We've made fun of it before. If you watched the show for a couple of years, you remember we went to a Ubuntu One conference many years back during the only year that they ever even had the Ubuntu One conference. And it was like half Macs. It was just MacBook after MacBook after MacBook.
It wasn't like that here.
It wasn't like that here. So honestly, It's better than it has been in years past.
I would agree with that too. Yeah. So
there are still a few.
Now, should we talk about the after party?
We have to talk about the after party. So this is Linux Fest is great. Lots and lots of interesting sessions. Oh, and I want to actually give a kind of a big kudos to the people who traveled from London,
Iowa,
Sydney, Australia, Iowa, Chicago. Austin, Texas, Chicago, a lot of people from Canada.
I hope we didn't let you down when you met us and we're just like, hey.
I felt terrible.
I did
this
too.
One, just this one example, this cute little couple from London comes up to us and they seem like totally cool people, but we were, you know, we had like
you
2 seconds
wrapped up
here.
Thing.
I had just wrapped up. Yeah. We got to move. Yeah. Keep going.
Yeah.
And they stopped us. We took pictures with them. We did all this stuff, shook their hands. We talked for like a few seconds. We got to get going. And I never saw them again.
No.
But I know they were there.
Yeah. They said, well, when we heard you guys on Linux Action, we're going to go to Linux Fest. We decided we got to go.
Well, that's awesome.
We literally had like a 30-second.
I felt horrible. So, I was like, I want to hang out with these people.
I hope they had a good time.
They had to be awesome, right? I mean, in order to come from London.
Or crazy.
Or I don't think they were crazy. They didn't have that crazy look in their eyes.
No.
But what amazed me was there was so many people there from internationally that weren't speakers.
Right.
They were just there to enjoy Linux Fest in Bellingham, Washington.
Well, Bellingham is actually really beautiful.
It's a cool town. But it was an amazing fest.
But the climax really is the after party.
It really was.
It's held at the Spark Museum, which
isn't open yet.
Really?
So here's a little background on this. So this is not necessarily Linux related, but this is awesome related, and all nerds will love this.
Yeah.
There is a museum up in Bellingham, Washington that used to be called the Museum of Radio and Electricity, or Radio and Technology, or something like that. It kind of went out of business. These guys came in, they picked it up, and they've renamed it to Spark, the Museum of Electrical Invention.
That makes sense.
Or Innovation, or something like that. So it's called Spark. And they're combining all that was previously there, which was like wall after wall of the coolest,
greatest old gear.
Just astounding old stuff. I mean, we're talking they have in there the one of the phones that was used when the actual one when they've made the first transatlantic phone call.
Oh, really?
They have one of those in there.
They also have an old switcher's terminal for the old operator lady. Yeah. Operator, please stand by. You know, all those. I mean, they have everything for that. They have coolest.
Everything.
They have radios that are super high tech. TVs that are
old. The Edison electric pen. They've got real full working versions of those. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's amazing what they've got in there, and it's just room after room of just the coolest geek stuff ever.
We've got two clips I think we should play. I've got here's the walk-in that we did where you kind of get a little sense of it, and one of their presenters starts showing us a little thing, and then I think we should play the Tesla coil one.
Yeah, let's do that.
All right, here's the first clip. Check this out. This is the Spark Museum. And here, when we get in here, we're just walking around and we're looking at like the various hardware and gear that they have here.
And a lot of this stuff is like from World War I and World War II.
Yeah, it's very
and
old.
A lot
very
of stuff way earlier than that.
Mesh netting inside. It's not touching, but it just transmits the mesh ions. So I'm gonna put this cap back on.
This kid was awesome.
This kid was great.
This kid risked life and limb just to entertain us with electricity.
This kid electrocuted himself and us.
So many times. Many times. Hey, everybody, don't touch it right here. You'll die. But touch the other parts real quick.
Yeah.
So
he's shocking himself now with this. With what looks like a lightning lamp without the glass around it. Now, this is nothing, though, compared to your clip, Brian, makes this one kind of look like a little bit of a joke.
All right. So go ahead and throw the video up.
Okay.
All right. So what you're seeing here is, on the left, one of the largest Tesla coils in North America. It was used for at least a small period of time what's it called? Cirque du Soleil.
Yeah,
Cirque du Soleil built it for one of their shows.
Right.
From my understanding, something went wrong, and so these guys got it pretty cheap.
Something went wrong?
I never got any details, but it made for a great demonstration.
It sure does.
Now, what you're seeing on the right-hand side is a gigantic custom-made Faraday cage. If you don't know what a Faraday cage is, you got to look that up on Wikipedia because it's pretty awesome.
Yeah.
There is a man sitting inside the Faraday cage on top of a barber's chair, an old-school barber's chair, like the kind you'd see in like a Vincent Price horror movie. So the whole thing is very, it's not so much steampunk as so much as in intense horror movie awful.
I called it, I ladled it Spark, legit steampunk.
Legit steampunk.
It's real.
Truly amazing.
So audio listeners, what you're going to hear is pretty remarkable. If you get a chance, check out the video version. But
yeah, the video version really does it, but the audio is pretty killer.
You'll get the gist.
So they're going to fire this up in a second. I'm going to go ahead and hit play.
All right.
Kind of getting prepped, and so the room goes dark. Everybody's drunk at this point, too, we should point out.
Drunk Linux nerds, wall to wall.
Yeah, it's late in the night.
And he's about to get this thing charged up.
Yom, yom, yom. Dude, now, did you say you were feeling, could feel it in the air?
Oh, hell yeah. At this point, your whole body was feeling funky.
Man, I wish I hadn't missed this. All right. Here it comes.
Watch the man in the cave reaching up and reaching towards the strike.
Drunk Linux nerds like that.
Yeah. Yeah, it turns out drunk Linux nerds love Tesla coils.
Well, that was really cool. So that was, there it is with the lights back on again.
Oh, but hold on, I'll zoom back here. Let's get some shots.
You want to get some shots of
electricity
again?
Look at that. Yeah. He's reaching up. You can see his hand right there.
That's balls.
That is balls. I mean, I know. He's in a Faraday cage. He's safe. But come on.
What a great way, though, to wrap up the whole Linux Fest event. It's such a good community there, and I really liked it. I really had a good time this year. I'm sure it's great today, too. I'm not able to make it because we're doing this.
We can't get up there on Sunday. But no. Honestly, it was absolutely stellar. I loved all of it. Again, if you want to check out my sessions, go over to lunduke.com. I've got links to the YouTube Jupiter Broadcasting page where you can see all of them, or you can just go to
Brian,
YouTube.
Those aren't links, right? You embed, right? I mean, come
I did both.
On. What is this?
I did both links and embeds. Links and embeds.
Hey, Brian.
Both of them combined together in one glorious little package.
All right, well, I think we've been doing our clip show long enough. We should probably toss it over to Matt, who's got a great how-to, and of course, it is sponsored by System 76, and Matt runs all of these how-tos on his Wild Dog Performance from System 76.
And the really cool part is Matt this week is going to be teaching us how to build your own Faraday cage and Tesla coil combo. So take it away, Matt.
Thanks, guys. Today we're going to be talking about a user question that was submitted to me recently. They wanted to know how they can take a Google Plus Hangout, record it, and then actually blur out a certain part of the context in that Hangout as not to give away certain personal information. Maybe it's an account number or a phone number or a secret password to something. Well, I'm going to show you how to do that today, and we're going to go ahead and jump over to my desktop here. And the first thing you're going to want to do is make sure you have something called Webcam Studio running in the background. And for those that may remember from previous episodes, we've talked about Webcam Studio. All right. And there we popped it up on the screen. And as you can see, I've already got everything running. I've clicked into my devices to get all that going. So let me start a webcam. Click play. That is going to play for me. So I'm going to minimize that. Now I'm going to jump into Google Plus and make sure that that is working. So before I do anything as far as starting a live Hangout, I generally like to test my cam and make sure that's going to work. So we're going to go ahead and give that a test run. And we're going to go to my settings and make sure that my Webcam Studio is the device that we're working with. And by gosh, it is. And as I can see down here at the very bottom of the screen where my mouse is moving, that appears to be working great. So we're going to go ahead and exit out of that. Now we need to find something to record our desktop. As it so happens, I use something called Kazam. Not to be confused with any type of superheroes, but it is a really cool app that does a fantastic job providing solid webcam, or rather desktop recording. You can select your video source, which in my case is a single display. And if you're using a mic, you're going to want to make sure to toggle your audio source and select the device you wish to use. In my case, I'm not using audio, so it's really a moot issue. So now, what's that? Well, it's a moot issue. You know, get it? Right? Okay. So anyway, so you got your audio source here, and we're going to go ahead and leave that untoggled in my particular instance because it doesn't really matter. So capture mouse is toggled. That's great. I like a count to three timer. That way it's not too long. Frame rate of 20 is looking good, and I'm going to go ahead and hit record. You'll immediately see a countdown, and here at the top of the screen, you'll see where it is actually running the software. See the little red dot up there? Now I'm going to come back to Google+. I'm going to come back and start my Hangout. remembering that I'm recording the desktop the whole time this is happening. I'm an antisocial sort, so I'm not going to invite anyone, and I'm just going to record myself, essentially. And I am now recording the desktop, and I'm going to do a little jig and do a little dance, and I'll blur something out here a little bit later, and I'll show you how to do that. So we're going to say, I've made my presentation. I've done my Google Hangout. I'm done. All right, that was exciting. We're going to exit out of that. Minimize our Firefox. Now we have recorded all the video we want. We're going to now come up to the upper right-hand corner where that software that records the desktop is running. Click Finish Recording. It's going to present us with some options. We can export it to OpenShot or KDN Live. I don't like doing that personally, automatically. And the reason for that is if I crash or perhaps close something without saving it, I've lost all that footage. So I usually choose to save it for later. And I'm going to hit continue, and I'm going to choose to save it under, let's save it under the videos of this folder. That's fine. We'll replace that puppy. Now we're going to close that software. Now all that video recording's been done. We're going to open up our KDN Live software, and I'm going to come into the clips area of the software. And if you feel overwhelmed at this point and it's going to happen, don't worry. Step-by-step instructions will be provided in the show notes, so you don't have to memorize all this. Just consider this more of the walkthrough or the wow effect. Now, back in the clips area, right-click, add clip. I'm going to browse to my home directory and to my video section because that's where I saved the desktop recording. And it is saved in WebM, which is generally pretty high quality, so I'm usually pretty happy with that. It's going to say, hey, your clip doesn't match our current project's profile, blah, blah, blah. You don't care. You just click OK because it's going to self-adjust everything for you so it can look its best. Now I'm going to drag it into my timeline. And now I have a working something or another to work with. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to immediately trim this down because no one really wants to see my setting this up. So we're going to come over to about here. After dragging our little time deal, and I'm going to click the scissors to cut. Come back up here to the timeline with the scissors and make an incision. I'm now going to come back over to the section I want to delete where my scissors are. Right click, and I will choose cut. And that didn't work. Let's actually choose select tool. And now actually just hit the delete key because that's easier. There we go. Okay. And I'm going to drag that back over this way. Drag my selector back that direction. Now, I've got a little video here, and I'm going to show you how to smudge something out. Let's say I'm making a ransom video. Obviously, I'm kidding. But let's say I'm going to make a ransom video to the people that take care of my pet because I feel they're overcharging me. But I want to remain anonymous, and I'm going to send them a video. So I'm going to blur out my face in this particular case. So I'm going to come up to the effects list here at the top, and I'm going to look for blur and hide. And I'm going to select obscure, double click that. And that should automatically, by double clicking it, take over the whole clip that I have selected down here. Now, if you come up here to the top right, you'll notice there's a little yellow box that I'm moving around. It's hard to see when it's that small, but thankfully KDN Live has a nice little zoom tool that I can zoom in on here so I can make myself look like something off of a really creepy horror movie, because I can do that. There we go. So I'm going to blur myself out through most of the course of this, zoom back out. Whoop, that's about so. And now I'm going to run the software playing the video to see that's about where I want it. Okay, so that's about what I want. And I'm going to then trim that about so, come back to the scissors, select the area I want to trim out. Come back to the select tool, select the clip to be deleted, hit delete key, goodbye. Bring that back, and it's already been saved. I'm not even going to worry about saving it because I'm not going to save the project. So now that should be about what I want. So now I'm going to go ahead and I can go ahead and render that, and then you would have this. Let me zoom that back in for you here. You can see up here at the top where I'm blurred out. But what does that really look like? What does that actually end up looking like when you're working with such a thing? I actually produced a video that shows an example of what you can do by taking that little box and selecting stuff. I'm going to actually jump right into that here. Let's see. Here we go. This is a video that I made at home where I actually blurred out my t-shirt. This is helpful if you have something on your t-shirt you don't want people to see. I'm actually a pirate, and I really don't want anyone to know that I pretend to be a ninja on Saturdays. So I had to blur out the t-shirt because I didn't want to offend anyone. So as you can see, you can blur something out, but if you want to move the blur, you will actually have to do so in the software itself by making sure that, let me jump back into that. Stack transition, and we'll zoom back in on that. You will actually have to do that from a manual perspective, assuming my software is not going to freeze on me. Go, there we go. So, like, for instance, let's say I moved my head over to the right later on in the clip. I would then adjust the timeline accordingly, make a cut, and then move my little blur box to reflect that change. It doesn't do it dynamically, so it does take a little bit of editing work. But as you can see, the finished touch is really, really handy. So that's pretty much how you would then do that. Now, at this point, you would obviously want to render the video, and I can give you a quick show on that. I'm not going to actually do any rendering, but I'll show you what I generally like to do with my rendering style. I will usually use maybe 720p, and you can choose to render it wherever you want. I happen to be a fan of using like H.264 works as well. But if you want to do like just a standard HDV, that's fine. I've honestly found that the HDV generally looks a little less jerky, especially if you're using like images or if you're doing a document and you're trying to, you know, fuzz something out with that. It's a little less jumpy. So that usually works pretty well. You can give that a whirl. But that's really all there is to it. So to recap, again, you have your video. You can blur it. Simple. And of course, you can, in fact, capture video from Google Plus using this wonderful, wonderful little software here, which I will, because I am. So, right there. Presets for Kazam, I usually leave them alone. I don't get too creative as far as what you want to, as far as how you want to do GStreamer. I like using WebM just because, again, it doesn't come out jerky. It usually comes out pretty clean. And whatever the display source usually should be automatically selected for you. And check your audio sources. Go back to the video that I did on Pulse Audio to remember how you're going to use that control panel to select the proper audio source. Or you can use this one here. Test both. Do some test recordings to make sure that's working for you. It really just depends. So, you know, I usually use Pulse Audio for that, but you can actually use the selector if you want. I've used both and had success with both, so use whatever works for you. Well, that's it for me. That's how you make a video with Google Plus's Hangouts, blur an image, and do a lot of cool stuff like that. Back to you guys.
And that brings us to the end of this week's electrifying podcast. Right?
Oh, right? I get it.
Yeah? Oh, man, seriously. I am so tired right now. I am barely thinking right now. But, all right. You want to get a hold of us?
Probably.
Lots of links. You can find them. I have a few things I want to touch on first.
Okay.
First.
All right.
Can we throw a screenshot over here by any chance?
Boom.
Boom. I made this little desktop for my wallpaper for my presentation at Linux Fest. For those of you listening to the version, you don't know what it is. It's crazy, but whatever. You can't see it.
For the audio version.
For the audio
version.
You're
leaving out words.
I'm leaving out words. I don't have any more words left. This is going to be hard to get through. But people ask me, where can I get this wallpaper? Go to lunduke.com and made a little post with some of the wallpaper I used during those sessions.
Nice.
Second of all. I started a new software license. Well, it's applicable to not just software, but everything. And I'm going to be applying this to all of the things I make. I call it the Greater Lunduke license, and it is inspired by Bill S. Preston and Ted Theodore Logan from the
Now,
Bill and Ted
movies. Hold on, sir. You said anything. Can it apply to burgers?
Yes.
Really?
Yes.
What about hot dogs?
Yes. Theoretically, it can apply to anything that you can
What
you
about
can
a milkshake?
Yeah.
Anything I can create. Okay.
Yeah. So awesome. So definitely if you're running a burger joint, you can do it with
you
this.
You see where my line of thought is.
I see where your line of thought is. So it is a software license. This is the first revision of the software license. It is not an open source software license necessarily, but it is a nice software license that respects people in all sorts of real ways. And it is nicknamed the Bill and Ted license. So it is most excellent and most triumphant. If you want to kind of give your feedback on it, I would love feedback for it. As I iterate through this, I'm going to start applying this to real projects. There's been a little bit of interest already, which I think is very cool. The third thing I want to talk about, and I just think this is kind of cool.
Mr. Lunduke, this is Universal Studios. We need to talk to you about Bill and Ted copyrights. Could you please open your door?
See, but it's not called that. It's just his nickname.
Right.
His name is named after me.
Right.
But I named it the Greater Lunduk License, so it's the GLL instead of the... See what I'm saying? See where I went with
that?
All right. So the other thing I wanted to mention, just a total aside, Linux Tycoon.
Aside.
So Linux Tycoon is coming to Android. We know that. And iPhone and iPad, whatever. It's also coming to MAMO devices, including the 900s, N810s, the 950s, all those sorts of things. Because I actually built the mobile version of Linux Tycoon in Illumination Software Creator, and I have updated Illumination Software Creator, or it is in the process of being updated. Well, it's been updated, but not fully released to you yet, to where it has all the features necessary to build a game like this.
You lost me.
Those features are going to be coming out very shortly.
I don't get it. I can't get it because it's only available to you.
It'll be available to everyone in a minute.
Why are you teasing me with
this
stuff?
My words are really hard. If you want to follow along with that and you want to see how I'm building a video game like this in Illumination for all of these Linuxy platforms, Lunduk.com as well.
And if you want to talk about applying the GLL to burgers and milkshakes, you could also...
That's over on unfiltered.chris.
That would be chrislass@twitter.com.
Right. For burgers with Bill and Ted licenses.
So next week, we should be back to a regular format show. Hopefully, we've gotten some sleep. And hopefully, we managed to get this episode out.
I got taken out so bad.
And I'd like to hear your feedback on the torrent system, too. Let me know what you think. And if anybody wants to volunteer to seed those, if they have the capacity, that would be awesome. Because the whole idea there is to take pressure off of our CDN to save costs for the network. Because we're now paying for our transfer rates.
No.
Yeah, well, essentially, with Blip, we had a really sweetheart deal where we just paid a flat rate.
Yeah.
Well, that's just not how the world works.
That doesn't work.
And so if you can help us out with those torrents, that'll save us some operating costs. So much appreciated to everybody who does that. Yeah.
Woo!
I think that's the whole show, B-Man.
Yeah. I sure to God hope so, because I want to go home and take a nap.
All right, everyone. Well, thanks so much for tuning into this week's episode of the Linux Action Show, and we'll see you right back here next
week. Wait a minute. Did I tell people to buy my freedom-hating stuff yet?
Yeah.
Okay, good. Buy my freedom-hating stuff.
Here we go. Bum, bum, bum. Ba, 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 ba.
Dun, 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 dun. Here we go. Linux Action Show Season 21, Episode Lucky Number 7.
Yeah!